You're listening to the ANA Podcast Network, powered by Audacy, a leading multi-platform audio content and entertainment company. Listen on the Audacy app.
For the ANA Champions of Growth podcast, I'm Matthew Schwartz. According to a 2023 Gartner survey of 405 MarTech executives, 63% of the respondents said that marketing lacks the tools to successfully integrate and operate their tech stack. Redact the date from the Gartner survey, and the stat, or ones like it, would be relevant going back to the second Obama administration, at least. Marketers' frustration with their tech stack has been well documented in the past several years. Indeed, the constant stream of surveys chronicling marketers' torturous relationship with data has a Groundhog Day quality about it. But Chris Comstock, Chief Growth Officer at software firm Clarivine, says some marketers are starting to change their tune when it comes to the tech stack. He says a growing number of brands are shifting to an aggregate data model rather than departments crunching the numbers in isolation and being much more intentional about where to place their bets. The destination is a single source of truth, and depending upon where brands reside on the MarTech spectrum, it could be a long and winding road. Comstock joins me to talk about how marketers develop a more predictable data track, why failure may be more conducive to success than you think when it comes to technology, and the back-to-basics data model attracting a growing number of companies. Chris, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, happy to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Chris, we constantly hear the chorus. CMOs and marketers say they are either drowning in data or don't know what to do with what they have already. Do marketers need to perhaps flip the question, what is the least volume of data, along with other characteristics like variety, that marketers need for brands to fuel growth via data management?
For quite a long time, specifically in ad tech, it's been gather as much data as possible. That was enabled the fact that you could get log files at a user level for every single ad impression served across the internet. Fascinating, but also kind of interesting, but trying to create an understanding of what your customers were doing and trusting if they saw an ad or they clicked on an ad, they had to do something. What we're seeing now in the move away from cookies is causing people to just reevaluate everything. Like, yes, it was great that you had that, but you really didn't need to have it all. And so revisiting some of those strategies, understanding what are you going to do with the data and not having to collect everything in the hope of one day using it, but figuring out that line of what's the minimum amount of data you need, how do those different data sets relate to each other so you can make the informed business decisions. Over the years, even some of the metrics we've seen, I think, was it Meta just recently kind of changing some of the click spend issues and reporting on clicks and worrying less about those specific metrics, but they're all kind of directionally right. And if you're using them to inform your decisions, it can be helpful without having kind of that user level insight.
Does a less is more approach to data free up marketers to think more about people and brands? Don't marketers need to cut the bloat in data and be a lot more selective with the buttons they want to push?
Having all that data meant you spent a lot of time organizing it, cleaning it, slicing it, looking at it. The analytics team were spending a lot of that time and even having to organize it and connect it. What now is shifting is more the organization, building a hypothesis of what you're trying to do. Where do you want to test your markets? Trying to find those pockets of where your customers are, getting their attention, some of the influencer marketing of how do you stand out against your competition may mean less data, but could be more impactful to your business. And so it's just more of the planning and coordination and being more intentional about where you're going to make bets and where you're not.
So is it more so intellectualizing the data after so many years?
It's getting back to some of the basics of where are your customers, where are they going? Even a lot of podcast listening and newsletters that didn't exist even 5 years ago. And if that's where your customers are, finding ways to sponsor and do different things to stand out from the noise. Because right now, like with COVID, I know at least from our marketing team, trying to get people to respond to emails when inboxes are flooded with everyone trying to get attention, it's really hard to get people to sort through that noise.
And we can't avoid the 800-pound gorilla in the room, Chris, generative AI and the repercussions for data and digital advertising. Does AI tell you that marketers need more data or not necessarily so? Are there approaches like reinforcement learning and supervised machine learning that work well with small data sets?
Depends on the brand and the company. There are definitely situations where using aggregated data sets, understanding what those inputs are, using some of the tactics you mentioned can actually give you similar results. There's actually some case studies that folks have done on how they're doing that and with less data are able to move faster. It does require much more alignment and organization and coordination more towards the experimentation approach where you don't have a choice. You're getting less data from many of these partners and you even have the Walmarts and the Targets creating retail media networks. It's not just go run programmatic media. It's becoming kind of everyone's a little bit of a walled garden. And so trying to understand where you're going to find the right audience, what's working and what's not working, requires you to understand what those inputs are. Generative AI in general has gotten over one of the big bottlenecks around kind of those personalized experiences and experimentation by making it easy to create those different assets. You can create 50 or 100 different versions of assets, which used to require kind of a lot of effort and energy to do that testing.
What else do marketers need to think about when it comes to melding AI with their data sets? What are you seeing with your clients right now? Is it all over the spectrum?
Generative AI is a big topic. We're a big Adobe partner. A lot of what they're doing with Firefly and content supply chain with Adobe Summit coming up next month. There's definitely a lot of conversations around how do we connect creative to media. Almost feels like a renewed investment. Part of that is from the Gen AI content creation, making it easier to do that. At least in the enterprise, which typically where we sell into, where this problem is magnified, there's much more of a focus on trying to understand what's working, what's not working, hundreds of thousands of different assets that have been created over the years, trying to find and understand where those assets have been used, brand safety, and that creative experimentation, enabling those personalized experiences, doing more testing on messaging tied to audience requires some coordinated efforts across typically your media agencies from an execution standpoint. It's opening up a renewed interest. Even things like dynamic creative, something that I felt like not everyone talked about a lot, is coming back to light. On the other side, what we're seeing is still a little bit of hesitation around fully turning on AI. So there are some concerns more on the like regulated industries of not understanding what's going into the models. We're even seeing customers ask in contract negotiations for making sure that it's turned off. AI is turned off because they're not quite yet comfortable with turning it on without more information. There's definitely a hesitation, pockets it's being used and leveraged, but broadly within some of the bigger enterprises, there's still just questions and hesitation, you know, more from a brand risk perspective.
And with AI nascent, and when you talk about creative experimentation, Chris, does that suggest that brands need to embrace failure more?
100%. The failure when you're spending media dollars is really hard to embrace. If you think about landing page optimization, A/B testing, I mean, there's failure inherently baked in the test you're going to run. Something's going to fail. And because everyone's comfortable with those landing pages, because you control them on your own website and you can see the results. And you, again, back to that observation of seeing what worked and therefore you can trust it. You get into the media landscape where you've got testing maybe Amazon versus Google. It's hard to compare that. So you have to embrace, to your point, that failure and understand failure is okay. It's part of the learning process. But embracing that when you're spending thousands of dollars can be a challenge.
I want to shift gears a moment, and whether it's contextual targeting, personalization at scale, or creative automation, they all require data standards. From a day-to-day standpoint, how do CMOs and marketers cultivate and hone their data standards?
We like to talk about data standards. It includes everything from taxonomy, metadata, link structure, product catalogs, naming conventions. If you ask any two marketers, how do they think about data standards? You get different answers. Generally, having metadata and taxonomy as a core pillar of your data strategy is becoming more and more important as we talked about aggregate data sets, clean room, understanding what's working and what's not working. Brands or marketers, agencies have been using naming conventions, but they've been using them in text fields in different systems. And so they use that as a way to kind of manage that contextual information, brand specific things by putting it in a naming convention with a bunch of short codes. We always kind of show that to customers and they always recognize the string of letters with underscores or dashes. And there's a lot of people in those organizations that can visually parse that out. They're like, oh, it's this brand for this channel. And we've got to move towards it being a more first order data management problem and because cookies are going away. And actually just making it a prioritized effort. The media teams are going to have a different set of taxonomy and data requirements or data standards than your email team. And that's okay. There doesn't need to be a single standard. In fact, those standards are going to change over time. We often see some customers that go through big kind of transformation projects, try and figure out kind of all the answers, and ultimately they get to a place only to have something change. And I think sometimes the concept of change is hard to embrace or understand, but all change isn't bad. Snap didn't exist, you know, whatever, 7, 8 years ago, and there's just different ad formats and different ad types, and that's an okay change, but you need to have kind of a common understanding, not just across your operations teams, but the teams, the data science teams, the analytics platforms that are actually measuring that, they need to be able to be nimble enough to adapt to the changing data needs of the organization.
So if I'm to understand you correctly, although every company has its black box when it comes to data management, are you saying that there are starting to bubble up to the surface certain commonalities that transcend, say, size or sector that are starting to bake in to the market when it comes to leveraging your data and maximizing the numbers?
We see some common ways of structuring data across specific verticals, but even within a given vertical, while there may be commonalities between the products two companies sell, how they think about their data, how their business is organized, maybe geographically by business unit, the technology systems they use, they're all different. No two organizations are the same. Again, we do see commonality in the things they're trying to accomplish, the things they're trying to do, and the objectives. Their data needs and their data standards are really different and unique, which is not a bad thing.
In an article you wrote for Ad Age a while back, Chris, you said that marketing teams and external partners that create campaigns on behalf of the same organization often use conflicting taxonomies based on different data sources and metadata tags. Isn't that a recipe for disaster? What are the main steps to create a data taxonomy that's going to show meaningful returns?
We've heard many stories of some of those disasters. Because everything has for so long been connected to a cookie and everyone's been able to trust that it's working. And even in the industry, there's a lot of studies that show X percent of media is wasted. You just threw away 20% of your media, like that's okay. Understanding kind of where to start that a taxonomy is important rather than it being an after a side project. We see some customers, they're focused on new CDP installation or a new dam, and they kind of push down the organizing the data as part of that transformation or that installation of that new software. And they kind of wait till after the fact, but they often come back and go, oh, now this is even twice as bad as it was the first time. I mentioned different teams have different data needs, and that's okay. But there are some things that can be common in terms of how the data gets structured to make the analytics team get the data they need, understand it. You've got to think broadly about that taxonomy. How does it apply to creative? How does it apply to media, email? A lot of work, we're getting pulled into conversations from workflow management systems to connect it back to the budgeting and finance. So trying to understand that investment as it relates to the operational systems within the organization. There's a master taxonomy or, you know, traditional taxonomy and ontology management system at a lot of our customers, but it doesn't mean there's a single data model.
Aren't companies setting themselves up for failure unless they create that one source of truth when it comes to data management and clean data?
It's going to be an uphill battle if they don't embrace that change.
And as we head into a break, Chris, when you consider all the moving parts of data management, would it benefit marketers to craft a back-to-basics strategy, as you mentioned earlier in the conversation, when it comes to leveraging data? And if so, what does a base back-to-basics strategy look like right now?
Getting away from the easy button, the one click, build this audience, target that audience, and classic story of the shoes following you around the internet. That's very easy to do, and the technology is doing the heavy lifting. It's coming back to some of the basics of what are you trying to accomplish with your creative messaging and understanding who your audience is and where they are, like doing the research. It shifts the time allocation from more the analytics and measurement and technology to actually more planning and organization around what you're trying to accomplish and what the outcome is, and then testing those hypotheses against different channels and different audiences so you can get that attention of where your customers ultimately are.
Stay with us. There's more to come.
And now for a brief message regarding A&A Magazine. Marketers face a constant barrage of challenges, from recruiting new talent to sustainability to figuring out how generative artificial intelligence will affect ad creative. A&A Magazine tracks the latest developments and trends in B2C, B2B, brand purpose, and across the industry at large. The publication provides marketers with the real-world intelligence they need to drive growth and boost their value throughout their organization. Find the publication at ana.net/ANA Magazine.
Welcome back. I'm speaking with Chris Comstock, Chief Growth Officer at software firm Clarivine, about how marketers get a better grip on data management. Right now, what are the most effective ways for marketers to build and sustain clean data?
We talk a lot about proactive versus reactive. I mentioned the cookie files. I've mentioned kind of building these data pipelines and pulling in all this user level data. And because you had that user ID and you could stitch this data together, you could clean it up effectively. Losing the ability to connect those data sets together makes it really difficult to clean up what you don't have or what you can't connect together. And so when we think about the best way to clean data, it's about putting the standards up front, proactively in place. If you structure everything right, you can trust it. When you get it to the end, there's less cleanup. There's higher quality and confidence in the data, and therefore some of those optimization and AI projects that have never really been able to be fully turned on and automated, teams feel more confident in the data they're receiving because they're getting it from a single place, or there's consistency across those teams. The inputs to those models, to those systems, are just consistent, and you don't have to hope to clean up stuff. We had a case study that came out for Under Armour, talked about it took them 6 weeks typically to clean up all their data to get it to a place that they trusted. And now they do it, make daily decisions because they're getting the same consistent data across their analytics and measurement systems.
Are you seeing more and more of your clients go that route?
The market's kind of taking everyone there by the loss of signal. There's requiring kind of some of that revisiting of data strategy, making metadata and organization of data more important. Once data has been aggregated, you can't unwind it. And so you have to understand what those inputs were. And that preparation, the organization, the alignment of what your campaigns, what you're doing, what the audience targeting was, what the creative message was combined with that audience, that needs to be structured up front to be able to automate any of the decisioning, which requires ultimately less cleaning of that data.
Marketers, of course, have been conditioned for years on so-called big data. But can big data cause problems? Because per data guru Les Bennett, big data is actually short-term data. And if companies want to spur growth, don't they need long data and to track the key business metrics over years, not just weeks or quarters?
Understanding over the course of years for some customers may still be beneficial. There's, you know, a lot of seasonality in the retail space, and understanding some of those dynamics can definitely be helpful. Having that at least an aggregate level, campaign level, and understanding those lessons and learnings, I think is still valuable. But the time to build these big data sets, to understand every single nuance, understanding what your hypothesis was, and if it's directionally increasing revenue, do you care if you have every single answer, or do you just make an adjustment on the fly, which requires less data if you have the confidence in what you're testing and how you set up those experiments? You ultimately can move much quicker at a fraction of the cost, and you're able to move faster because you're not trying to aggregate and clean everything up on the back end.
But how do marketers circle that square with the fact that company CFOs are looking for more immediate returns? Is that when we start to get into what I call this Groundhog Day quality of modern marketing?
This is where I mentioned a little bit of that connectivity back to workflow, media investment, revenue. It's a big shift, and it's not just for the marketing team to understand that shift, that we're losing the ability to see exactly what's working. So that attribution of this person did something at this point in time is going away, which when you're trying to justify marketing spend can be a challenging conversation with a CFO. But it's something that ultimately everyone has to embrace. Ironically, for us as a software company, we're helping our customers do it, but we're also having to deal with these market challenges ourselves. We're living it and helping our customers solve the same problem, but pulling the finance teams in, helping connect that and understand it together, I think is the best approach.
And as we start to wrap up, Chris, you rightly mentioned the importance of the pending demise of third-party cookies per Google. Cookies are scheduled to go away in the third quarter, but as you well know, that's been delayed time and again. I don't think there would be much of a surprise if it got delayed yet again. Either way, anecdotally, a lot of marketers seem ill-prepared for the demise of cookies. What sense do you get from your clients about the situation? And I guess the larger question is the marketing industry headed for a crash?
It does feel like there's a different sense of urgency, you know, from at least the conferences and conversations that I've had even in the last 90 days. It feels like there's definitely some urgency. You finally did have Google turn on the 1%. So there's at least some tangible action happening. It's a little bit ironic that Safari turned off cookies, was it 2014, 2015? So we're really just talking about Google making a change, not cookies going away holistically. I don't think there's a crash coming. I do think there's a change, which is a good thing for everyone. It's an innovation.
But how disruptive is that going to be when you talk about change?
If you think about Google, the majority of the revenue comes from ad dollars. So it's in their best interest not to change if people aren't ready. And so I think that's where you're seeing right now some of the privacy sandbox and some of the back and forth that's happening. And I'd say somewhat the collaboration within the industry. They can't change if then it causes the ad dollars to go away. You're going to see some of that dynamic happening until people are ready to make those changes. And that's where it's going to probably take longer than is expected.
That suggests another delay.
Yeah, it will be a delay because connected back to the revenue implications,
sure.
They don't want to disrupt that piece. And you're already starting to hear a little bit of it. It's maybe more inevitable that something's going to give and something's going to change because that process has started, which historically they hadn't turned on that clock yet. There will be some delay, but the change is going to happen. And to me, it's just a matter of when and in what form.
Regardless of when and what form, what can marketers do now to get a better grip on both first-party data and zero-party data? Is that really the next frontier?
I always struggle with zero-party data because it feels like someone's got to own the data. Like if there's data there, someone's got to own it. Every marketer should already be thinking about the different tactics. We mentioned, how do you understand and better market to your customers? How do you acquire new customers? Whether that's first-party data, zero-party data, it should be all of the above in my mind. And it's going to vary by vertical and the types of customers and the data they have today versus the data they need and the gaps they need to fill in. Is it the next answer? It's an answer. I don't know if there's ever a next answer because even what we've been talking a lot about today, there's so much change happening and there's going to be more change ahead.
Chris, thanks so much for your insights. We're now going to move to the lightning round. A few quick questions for you. And here we go. The most exciting thing about working in marketing advertising is?
Velocity of innovation right now.
The most frustrating thing about working in marketing and advertising is?
Sometimes it feels like Groundhog's Day.
And the biggest challenge for marketers in 2024 is?
Focus. There's a lot to do and a lot of things happening. Focus is going to be important.
And we'll have to leave it there. Chris Comstock, Chief Growth Officer at Clarivine. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate the conversation.
You bet.
For more information about Clarivine, go to clarivine.com. Be sure to tune in next time when I'll be joined by Sally Percy, author of 21st Century Business Icons, Leaders Who Are Changing Our World, to talk about how marketers improve their leadership skills. If you would like to recommend a guest or topic for a future episode, please email me at mschwartz@ana.net. And be sure to subscribe to Champions of Growth wherever you listen to podcasts. That's all for now. I'm Matthew Schwartz. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of the ANA Podcast Network, powered by Audacy.